Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Awesome, like podcasts and stuff.
I've seen people with podcasts less desperate for approval.
I hope this isn't about your podcast again.
Please, podcasts are verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Welcome to the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Ben Heisler.
What is good? Welcome into the Awful Announcing Podcast. My name is Ben Heisler. Glad that you've decided to join us today. Our feature guest, an NFL Hall of Famer. She's an award-winning journalist and correspondent for NFL Network, along with HBO's Real Sports. And most recently, she was named one of the broadcasters with Hannah Storm on Amazon Prime's video coverage of Thursday Night Football. Andrea Kramer is our latest feature guest today. If you haven't had a chance to watch the Thursday Night games, by the way, with Andrea and Hannah, we talked about it a lot during the podcast today, and I highly recommend you check them out, because one of the things that we discussed during the podcast, amongst many different subjects, was what they wanted to make sure the audience took away from the broadcast. They didn't want it to be the same thing that Joe Buck and the same thing that Troy Aikman were doing, and it's a different type of commentary for an NFL game. And I think the thing to sort of take away from all of this is that we're in an era now for media coverage where we're looking for more than just what we've simply come to know, right? And I think this broadcast helps provide that. Again, all things we cover in today's show, which I really think you guys will enjoy. So before we get to Andrea, we do have a deal for listeners of the Awful Announcing Podcast. If you go to BreakingT.com, that's the letter T, BreakingT.com, Awful Announcing Podcast listeners can receive 20% off their purchase. And all you have to do is go to BreakingT.com and use the code AAPOD, that's all one word, AAPOD, for 20% off your purchase. Breaking T helps fans connect to the players and teams they love by memorializing the best moments in sports with fun and clever t-shirts in real time. At Breaking T, they're documenting history one shirt at a time. Remember, you guys can follow us on Twitter. We are at Awful Announcing. You can also follow me at Benny Heiss. And make sure you visit awfulannouncing.com for all the latest articles from some of the best minds in sports media. And last but certainly not least, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, or maybe this is your first time finding us, after you're done listening, it would mean a heck of a lot to let us know your thoughts on the show. And you can do that in a variety of different places. You can do it on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Overcast, really wherever you find our show. Please just take a quick moment to rate and review us so that more people can find the Awful Announcing Podcast and we can make the show better. This can also include any comments on future guests that you'd like us to include for the show. Whatever's on your mind, whatever it can help make the show better, please rate and review us wherever you find your podcasts. Okay, here is my conversation with NFL Hall of Famer and outstanding broadcaster, Andrea Kramer. Andrea, it's a privilege to have you on the podcast today. Thank you so much for your time. How you doing?
It's great to be on with you, Ben. I really appreciate your interest.
You know, in most NFL careers, you go into the Hall of Fame when the door has closed on your contributions to the league. Yet here you are, after starting your NFL career back in 1984 at NFL Films, and now being named a broadcaster a few weeks ago for Thursday Night Football. Did the 1984 young Andrea Kramer starting off in this NFL space have any sort of vision as to what you'd be doing 30-something years later?
Okay, so first of all, for those of your listeners who might be good at math, I started when I was 12. So we really need to make sure that people understand that.
We're talking to prodigy broadcaster Andrea Kramer
here,
course, on the podcast.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, that's a really interesting thought, which never really crossed my mind. Back in the old days, the other century in which I began my career, the idea of being a woman covering sports was still such an anomaly that it never really would have occurred to me. It's sort of strange for someone who has always been so detail-oriented and things of that nature. It's not as though I must admit, I've never had a path. I've never said, like, boy, I hope I go do here, 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 here. I feel like I've just been really fortunate to have had opportunities presented to me, and I've taken them. And in a lot of ways, they've been leaps of faith. And but no, I don't think I ever would have envisioned being here. And as to your first point, that has crossed my mind quite a number of times. When you think of these kind of quote-unquote lifetime achievement awards, you think about it being at the downside of a career. And I'm really proud that my career is still going strong and that I'm not waning. I think that's a really cool thing for me. It certainly, I on a personal level, it was really cool for me because my son and, of course, my husband could experience that with me. You know, I'm not going up there with a cane and, you know, little laddie, remember when? You know, that sort of thing. So yeah, it was really, it's really great to have an honor like this that's coming right in the prime of my career.
I do want to go back to the first thing that you mentioned of sort of these olden days when you were first starting off. And those were your words, not mine, from a 30-year-old perspective. So when you first
listeners, when I go back to when I'm very, very active in my high school, I went to a Quaker school in Philadelphia for 13 years. When I would go back there, and the kids, I remember one time the kids said to me, well, what was school like when you were here? And I look at them and I go, ESPN didn't exist. And they're like, what? Life without ESPN? And then I go, well, I didn't exist. And then they really look at me quizzically. But think about it, Ben. When I was in high school, when I would have been in their shoes, there were no women that you could look to say, gosh, I want to do what she does. Now I hear that all the time. Gosh, I want to do what you do. I want to be you, blah, blah. And that's, you know, a really lovely compliment. But that just wasn't the case for me growing up. There wasn't anybody that I could look to and say, I want to do what you did. And the few women that were doing it at that time, maybe a Phyllis George or a Jane Kennedy, who were, you know, lovely women, but they weren't what I would consider to be journalists, and they weren't what I would consider to be, you know, reporters. They were, in Phyllis's case, a former Miss America and things
right.
of that nature, and nobody was ever going to confuse me with that. So times have really, really changed.
Another interesting component to that, though, is you still had this start over in NFL Films in the mid-1980s, and I am curious as to sort of what you at that point in your life was telling yourself, like, okay, I'm here. And I know you said, like, I didn't necessarily have a path, but sort of what were those goals and sort of ambitions when you first started?
I'm really serious, Ben. It just wasn't like that for me. My first job prior to NFL Films, I was the sports editor of the largest weekly newspaper in Pennsylvania. And that was from 1982 to 1984. And it was a great first job. I was writing about six stories a week. I was editing. I would literally go to the production plant in Oxford, Pennsylvania, and physically lay out the paper, like X-Acto knife, the whole thing, tape and paste and cut. No, I'm serious.
I know, that's what makes it great. It's like there's a whole different generational element to working in a newspaper at that time.
Right. So I remember one of the people that I had profiled was this woman named Rosa Gatti, and she was the first female sports information director in the country. She was at Villanova, which was sort of in our backyard. Did a profile on her. 2 years later, when I'm interviewing at NFL Films, I reach out to her and I go, hey, would you write a recommendation for me? And she goes, well, I'd be happy to. What's the job you're applying for? And I said, I don't know. I don't even know what the job, I didn't even understand what the job was. The job ended up being, I was, for them, their first ever female producer. But at those, in those days at NFL Films, our titles were producer, director, writer, editor. We wore every imaginable hat that you could. We did all the research. You know, I would go up into the vault at NFL Films, and I would teeter on the ladder looking for the film case from the 1960 NFL championship game. And, you know, you're watching film, and you're editing, and you're writing, and you're scoring the music, and you're producing the whole segments and stories and half hour shows and things of that nature. It was just, it was like going to graduate school. It was amazing, not only just in terms of learning football, but in terms of learning TV production. And I went in there, and I've never been the kind of person who kind of BS's my way through anything. If I don't know, I'm going to ask.
Right.
And I just learned so much, and I had these male mentors, starting with the late Steve Sable and with a gentleman named Bob Ryan, who was the editor-in-chief there, and they were willing to sit with me and really teach me because I didn't really know film production, and I didn't really know storytelling. And I joke with Bob in retrospect, as well as with my first boss, the man who hired me at ESPN, John Walsh, I'm like, I was your draft pick. I was your first-round pick. You projected me. You all saw something in me that I never saw in myself. I mean, John Walsh saw this journalist in me, and I'm you know, obviously forever devoted to him for doing so. But he saw things in me that I just didn't realize. So I was just kind of going along. I was learning, making great contacts. And, you know, at the end of my five-year tenure at NFL Films, I had three job offers. So it's kind of been that way throughout my career, where opportunities have presented themselves, and I've hopefully chosen the right door to open, and then I've kind of barreled through it.
I know we're kind of skipping ahead a little bit here, but I want to go back at some point over the course of this conversation. But with regards to you being into the Hall of Fame, one thing I remember you mentioning when you joined Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth in the booth, it was during that Hall of Fame game, amidst your accomplishments in football, is that you made sure to mention that you weren't just an NFL broadcaster or a correspondent or a producer or a writer or a media member, but that you went in as a mom too. And I'm wondering, when you first became a mom, did you feel, like, how did you feel about the impact it would have on your professional career at that point?
Well, I also know how Al and Chris feel about family and about my son. But yeah, I mean, look, what I realized, which I didn't necessarily get at that time, is that whereas I heard from so many people about the achievement of getting into the Hall of Fame and being the second woman behind the iconic Leslie Visser, but for me, you know, being the first working mom to go in there was really important. And all these women were reaching out and saying to me, boy, you know, you are the person that proved that it's possible, that you can have a child, you can go through a season pregnant, and you can still cover the National Football League. I mean, I remember running into the Sage Steele when she was starting out, and she was at one of the local stations in Baltimore. We ran into each other in a press box, and she was pregnant, and she was like, how do I do this? You know, and how am I going to nurse, and how am I going to do it? And so I felt a real responsibility to try to help people in terms of getting through some of the logistics and some of the emotional things and stuff like that. And so I was really proud of that, but I didn't realize the impact that that had on it until I started getting all this feedback when the Hall of Fame was announced. So it was, that was a real awakening. But again, you know, boy, I remember being pregnant and somebody saying, what are you going to do? I mean, how are you going to travel? How are you going to continue to do this? And I look at them and I go, oh my God, you're right. I'll be the first working mother who ever travels, right? You know, it just, people weren't used to it. But I will tell you, it was hilarious going through a football season pregnant, because here I, at that point in my career at ESPN, you know, I had this like really sort of bulldog reputation, you know, always going to be, you know, looking for the information and always trying to, you know, get the interview and things of that nature. And now all of a sudden these guys sort of saw me in a different light. I'll never forget the Hall of Famer, Chris Dolman. I was doing a Vikings game and he's there and he's like, okay, so you know you can't eat Brussels sprouts because otherwise the kid's going to get colic. And I'm like, what colic? You know, you're talking to someone who never changed a diaper before. What's colic? And I was just laughing so much. These guys just had this advice for me, and they sort of saw me in a totally different light, and it was really kind of this wonderful experience. Everybody was so paternalistic between the players and the coaches, and it was a really cool time.
I'm glad you mentioned that too, because I think there were probably people in a similar situation that might have looked at it and said, what do I do? And I think your response to that situation is, what do? I just keep continuing to do what I'm doing. And that, I think, is sort of what helped a lot of people along the way, is the idea of, I might be having a kid soon, but that doesn't change anything about my job. I'm still going to power through. And you looked at it as a completely normal thing. And you know, maybe at the time it didn't feel like much, but I know, as you said, with Stage Seal and to a lot of other women in the profession, that made a substantial impact on them.
Right, absolutely. And this may be getting a little too personal. This may make some of your viewers go, ew, but this is the reality. I nursed my child for almost 2 years, okay? And the probably the best thing that I had going for me is a husband who was so supportive of that and would run around and buy dry ice, and we'd ship it all over the country and FedEx it all over the place, and it was really great. So I'm at a team. I'll say who it is because it's not a big deal. I was at the Ravens, and they were really great, and they would give me a room where I could go in and I could, pump, and then I had a case where I would ship the breast milk in dry ice. So the cooler was sitting outside head coach Brian Billick's office, just sitting there with the FedEx tag on it. And there was sort of some young guy who must have worked in some place in lower levels in coaching. He kept walking by staring at it. Finally, he says to me, I'm so sorry, I just have to ask you, what's in there? And Billick comes out of his office, like screams out of his office and goes, that's private. You don't ask her about that. And I'm like, wow, okay. And the poor kid sort of like skulked away. But that's the kind of thing that I would get. People were really protective over me and were really respectful. And I cannot tell you how grateful I was for that type of thing. Because, look, never wanted any kind of special treatment or anything like that. But on the other hand, a pregnancy is not a disability. You know, you can work through it. And as I would tell a lot of young women, you can do whatever you choose to your mind to do. If this is what you choose to do, you just have to figure out a way to make it work. And if it's not something that you choose for your lifestyle, then that's fine. But it was something that I did, and I didn't want to not travel for 22 months, so we made it work. Is that, like, way too much information?
No. I mean, this is an inside look and something that I think a lot of people will find fascinating. So, no, not at all. I always love asking broadcasters this question, and it's sort of very relatable. I started off in radio for several years before ultimately moving on and handling something on these different podcast sides. So I'm curious to get your perspective. You mentioned that Mr. Walsh over at ESPN sort of looked at you as this draft pick and sort of he saw things in you that maybe you yourself didn't see. And I'm wondering when in your career you kind of felt like you had sort of come into your own and you found your voice and you said, you know what, this is exactly what I'm supposed to be doing.
I feel like I had a great gig when I was back at ESPN. And I was able to tell the stories that I wanted to do, and I was covering, you know, I had covered every sport, and I felt pretty respected and valued by the people I worked with and all. And then all of a sudden, the opportunity for Sunday Night Football came up. And I'd never done games. I'd never been a sideline reporter. Truthfully, I'd never aspired to be one. Long-form journalism was really more my thing. But my agent had said to me, Dick Ebersol wants the best play-by-play guy, the best color analyst, and who he feels is the best reporter, and this is the team that he wants to assemble to launch Sunday Night Football. So it was that coupled with the opportunity to do the Olympics, That's what put it over the top for me. You know, I wanted to work with what I still believe is the finest production staff, really in any sport, which is Fred Gaudelli, Drew Esikoff and company on Sunday Night Football, but also to be able to do the Olympics. And I remember when we were together at ESPN, Robin Roberts had told me one time, you don't want to cover the Olympics if you're a non-rights holder. You're doing interviews in parking lots and this, and you just, and here's the opportunity to do the Olympics. And that was, but you know what, Ben? I actually got emails from people in the business going, wow, this is really courageous of you to make this move. And I'm sitting going, really? Really? Because people didn't want to take risks. They didn't want to do, they didn't want to go outside of their comfort zone. And for me, kind of what my DNA is, I'm always looking to get better. I always want to learn. I always want to be challenged, hence where I sit right now with Amazon, parenthetically. But that was just this great opportunity. And how can you turn that down? I mean, I wasn't looking to leave ESPN, but when you're given the opportunity to do such different things and to really extend yourself, how do you not do that? So, again, it kind of goes back to what we're talking about here. I didn't set out to do it. The opportunity presented itself, and there it was, and I took advantage of it, and I learned throughout the whole process.
And I'm excited to get into these Amazon broadcasts that you and Hannah Storm are a part of. And I apologize sort of for the length of this question, but I kind of feel like it needs a bit of a setup here. I think there's two different lenses to look through when it comes to what your broadcast team is doing. And I want to hear about the meetings and learn more about your prep together for these games in just a second. But I think back to a couple years ago when Beth Mowins got the call for ESPN to do that Monday Night Football game. And now she's doing games, of course, for CBS as well, being the first female play-by-play voice for the NFL, and how even just a year later, like those same calls and those same media requests for, you know, let's talk about you being the first woman to do this, essentially went away, that it just sort of became more commonplace and accepted. And so that's sort of one perspective. And then the other one is, well, no, we should continue to discuss it. Let's make it more known that we need more diversity in media, particularly in sports. And while it's nice to be discussed as a sportscaster and not as a female sportscaster, there's still a reality that there isn't always equal pay for equal work, and there needs to be more representation, and that we do need to keep all of these conversations going. So before we sort of dive into your new opportunity with Amazon and the new broadcast team that you're a part of, I guess where do you stand on sort of where the conversation is continuing to progress on all of this?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com, code program.
Oh, that's a lot of convoluted thoughts there. You know, look, I have maintained very strongly sort of the same consistent message, which is regardless of your race, your gender, your ethnic background, whatever it is, somebody should be hired because they're qualified and good at the job. Not for any other reason. If those other factors exist, that's great. But you shouldn't put a woman in a situation just because she's a woman if she's not qualified. You're actually doing her a disservice. And I feel someone like Beth has worked so hard and quote unquote paid her dues, and just because she's a woman, she shouldn't get those opportunities. That's insane. So I was thrilled for her, and I was thrilled for Doris Burke, and thrilled for Jessica Mendoza. But these are women who have worked for it. They haven't just shown up. They haven't just been attractive. They're knowledgeable, and they're really good at what they do. And when it comes to these gender issues, I think to an extent, you have to just put these blinders on. And you have to understand that there's still a segment of the population that does not want to consume any news delivered by women. And you know what? Fine. Good for you. Don't listen to my broadcast. Don't watch my stories. Your loss. That's what I say. You can't cut out a segment of the population because of their gender or their race or anything like that. But those people exist. And as I tell young people coming in the business, you cannot do anything about it or to change those people's minds other than doing the best possible job that you can do. You know, understand that you have a double standard that exists. You cannot make mistakes. Everybody makes them. Just don't make the same one twice. And you have to be able to focus on what you're doing and not like you're some trailblazer. If that turns out to be an unintended consequence, all the better. But you can't go out there saying, I'm a woman doing this. And it just, I don't think that that's the way to go. I'm someone given an opportunity, and I'm going to kick butt doing it. That's my personal opinion. And the women that we've just mentioned all do that.
Right.
And
no doubt.
Do they do it because they're women, or do they do it because they're the consummate pro? Obviously, I feel the latter.
I agree with you. And I think there's still a component to when trailblazing happens that people do want to have those conversations. But ultimately, we're in agreement here that if you've paid your dues and you're really good and qualified for the job, then regardless of the situation, you should be hired because you've earned that opportunity. I'm with you there.
When Hannah Storm and I, respectively, picked up our phones from our agent, and he said, Amazon wants to talk to you about broadcasting Thursday Night Football. Am I allowed to use profanity?
Please.
I'm like, are you SH you-know-whatting me? That was my reaction. I'm like, seriously? And he said, yes. Will you have a conversation? So
they reached out to you guys.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We literally picked up the phone. And our agent, Phil DiPicciotto from Octagon, was there with this entreaty. Would you just take this phone meeting? So, of course, Hannah, even though we haven't worked together, we've known each other for decades. And her wonderful husband, Dan Hicks, was like my work husband. Heard me talk about the Olympics. He was my Olympics announcer for all those 6 years. I love Dan, and Hannah and I have known each other for a good 20-some years. So we get on the phone with a gentleman named Jason Weichelt, who is the head of live sports for Amazon, and Hannah and I are texting each other. I mean, we're sitting in front of our computers. First thing that comes out of Jason's mouth, he says, this is not a gimmick. I text Hannah, okay, good start. Let's listen. Literally, that's what it was like. Because we weren't, he actually got on the phone, and the first thing he said is, he goes, I can't believe I have the two of you on the phone. You know, this is really exciting for me. And that's sort of, this was a passion project of his. And he made it very clear from the start. Amazon wants Hannah Storm and Andrea Kramer. It's not as though if you guys don't do it, we're going to go to two other women. Either you two are going to do this, or we're not going to do this particular option of a broadcast. We're still going to have a Spanish stream and a UK stream. So they started to make all this clear. And then they, you know, it's not a gimmick. We're going to give you the resources that you feel you want. They try to say the right things. We had a lot of conversations about how we viewed it and how, more importantly, how we didn't view it, how Amazon viewed it, because you want to always have matching expectations. And it was made abundantly clear from us and to us, we don't want to be Joe and Troy. They do a magnificent broadcast on Fox. Amazon paid $50 million for the streaming rights. Why do they want the same thing?
Right.
They want to provide options. That's what they do. And that's what they are doing. And we are one of those options.
So when people do watch the broadcast, and I've had a chance to view it for the last couple of weeks, to me, it's felt like this sort of very conversational, really intellectual running commentary of the game. There's a lot of important information that comes out. And it feels like it's sort of a relaxed atmosphere to consume football that, you're right, isn't a traditional play-by-play and color commentary broadcast. And I'm wondering, when you and Hannah first set out on this project, what were you hoping that your viewers took out? Anything specific at all? Or did you just say, we have good information on the NFL, we know how to tell a story, we have a lot of different skill sets that work in television and in sports and in football? Like, was there anything specific that you wanted to make sure that your viewers got across from your broadcast in particular?
Okay, first of all, can I just put what you said on a loop, and can I continue to play it over and over again? Because you pretty much nailed it in terms of what we're looking for. You know, first of all, I live in a world of undersell and overdeliver. Don't tell people what you're going to do. We're not redefining the wheel. Don't say we're going to be the most unique. We're going to be the most. No, we're not. Isn't it kind of obvious? Hannah had never done play-by-play before for the NFL. I have covered the NFL for 30-some years, but I've never done, quote-unquote, analysis during a game, okay? We're not kidding anybody. It would be ridiculous for us to try to approximate the Joes and Troys and Al's and Chris's, and it would be insulting to them. I mean, that's not what we ever set out to do. I think we know the game. We've covered the game. We know the people that are playing the game. My old boss at Steve Stable always said, tell me a story and it will live with me forever. So are people necessarily going to remember 2nd and 3 from the 18, which was a 3-yard carry off of, off of the left tackle? Or are they going to remember a cool story about that left tackle? And again, when we say stories, you know, I think that there's sort of this misnomer, like, oh, we're going to talk about when he grew up in Mississippi and what happened with his. That's not the kind of story that we're going to be telling.
Right.
If he's got a really compelling backstory, then yes, you do want to talk about it. But we think that there's a lot more behind these players and coaches, and some of them can be, you know, strongly football-centric. I mean, look, I'm a total geek. I love watching film. I've been watching film for football since 1984, since I first got to NFL Films. I like it. I love to watch it with coaches. I love them to explain stuff to me. The other thing that I think is really important is, and Al Michaels told me this just last week, the language of football that exists. Cover 1, cover 2, cover 3, cover 0, backside penetration, A-gap, jet sweeps, RPOs, all this sort of stuff. As Al said to me, 99.9% of the audience doesn't know what announcers are talking about, and they really don't care.
Right.
Okay? So our thing was, number one, you can see the down and distance on the screen. So if we are talking over a play, which, believe me, if you're a sideline reporter, is anathema. You don't do that. You got 15 seconds, get it in and out between plays. Our thing was, if we are talking over a play because we're telling a really good story and the audience can see what the down and distance is, then that's okay. They're still finding out. They're still following the game. We never, ever lose track of what's going on in the game. And you know what? If that 2nd and 3 all of a sudden turns into a 70-yard pass, trust me, we're wrapping really quick and we're telling you what happens on the play. So it's about paying attention. We never not pay attention to the game. But our preparation is trying to prepare for the storylines that will be developed during the game and the story of the people who are playing it and coaching it. And I think that there is interest in that kind of broadcast for people. We hope so. And again, we're not trying to redefine the wheel. We are just trying to give an option. We're trying to tell football through our eyes and through our perspectives. And listen, I'm going to analyze a play. So if there's a DPI, if there's a defensive pass interference call, okay, I'm going to talk about, okay, here's what they're looking at. Did the defensive player, did he get his head around? Was he playing the ball? Mm-hmm. Was he draped all over the receiver? Was he impeding his process? Or were they both going for the ball? In which case, that defensive player has just as much of a right to compete for that ball in the air as the receiver does. That's what I want to try to explain to people. okay? Try it. So I'm not just throwing out this jargon that sounds mind-numbing. I'm trying to explain it as well. And truthfully, Ben, if I don't know what I'm talking about, you can be darn sure that I'm not talking about it.
Well, that's one of the biggest lessons in media, right? Is that as soon as you start bullshitting people, they'll come and they'll realize it because you can only do it once. And once you start to do it more than once, then people catch on. I think a lot of times there can be elements where we sort of think that the audience may not know something. And the reality is we kind of got to give them a lot more credit for being really smart, intuitive fans that may not necessarily care about what an RPO is or breaking down whether or not there's a single high safety. It's about, you know, being prepared at the core essence of a broadcast.
Right. Absolutely. I think that's true. And I feel that, you know, look, as I said, I'm kind of a geek when it comes to this sort of stuff. And I like to be able to break down what I'm seeing and why things are happening and all that. I just don't think that that's something that needs to be done for every single play. I think you pick your spots, and I think that you try to inform the audience. So you want to be informative, you want to be entertaining, you want to be memorable, and you want to have fun. This is something that Hannah just kept saying to me. You know, we got to have fun with this, and it's completely true, because I feel that the audience is savvy to the extent of, if they think that you're enjoying what you're doing, they're going to enjoy it along with you. If they feel that it is laborious, then why in God's name do they want to listen to
right.
you? And that's never, you know, that's never, I mean, we're talking about football. You know what I mean? This isn't, you know, don't get me started on hard news right now, okay? We're talking about football. This can be a release for people. This can be, you know, this should be something that's fun. We're the only game in town on Thursday Night Football. It's the end of people's, you know, work day. For some, it may be sort of hearkening in the beginning of a long weekend or whatever. So you want it to be fun and you want it to be entertaining. And that's, I hope that that's what we're beginning to accomplish.
And the other thing too, Andrea, is that we're starting to see more so in television. I think radio sort of picked it up on the earlier side with how much the podcast space is further developed. But I think you're starting to see it more and more, especially with live broadcasts, with games itself, that viewers want more perspectives. I'm thinking about what ESPN does for the College Football National Championship, where they devote their entire line of ESPN channels to these different perspectives. There's the casual channel, then there's the coach's film. ESPN right. for the National League Wildcard did a StatCast broadcast, and Jason Benetti, one of my guys, was terrific on it. And so now you have this element for football as well, and we're sort of in this new age of television and media where people want all these different options, and the
100%.
Idea, right, and that's why, to me, even if necessarily the viewership isn't, you know, at this top level of where the main broadcasts are, to me, I think that's kind of irrelevant, because people are looking for more options than they ever have before.
Again, you're hitting it right on the head, and it's interesting because, and this is not my purview, so I don't like to talk about things when they're sort of out of my lane, but the Amazon folks, it's not that they don't, it's not that they are looking for a rating like a Nielsen rating. They're all about the customer experience, right? So they're interested in how many positive reviews are they getting and what kind of feedback are they getting. That's what they care about. And it's really interesting, that sort of different perspective. The other thing is, and this, of course, is me exposing myself as a bit of a dinosaur that I am. So after our first broadcast, they said to us, since the news was announced on a Tuesday through the game, which was on a Thursday, so I guess over the course of, you know, 48 hours or between 48 and 72 hours, there were 4 billion impressions worldwide of Hannah and Andrea on Amazon Prime
wow.
Thursday Night Football. So that means around the world, 4 billion people saw something and noted something about this broadcast. So for me, that's sort of a whole nother realm, because we are in 200 countries, and it's a different reach, certainly. And again, these are kind of different metrics that are important to people. But look, this is where it's going. You know, kids aren't watching on a television. Who the heck has a television? television, you know?
Let alone cable, television. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So if you can stream something, then all the better. And it's really fun, and it's great. It's a great learning experience. Just it really is.
You've been super generous with your time, so I'll end on this note. We talked about all the different accomplishments that you've had throughout the course of your career, even, you know, made fun of it a little bit in the introduction. But is there one particular conversation, either in pregame with the coach? You mentioned that you have the opportunity to watch tape with a lot of these guys and to learn from them and to ask questions, or it could have been a profile on Real Sports. Is there something over the course of your career that maybe has stuck with you, whether it be something from the early 80s through now, that you just sort of look back on with very crystal clear lens and say, you know what, that was one of the best things that I've done?
That's a really hard question to ask because, again, I've been in this business for 30-some years, and between stories and events, and it's impossible, absolutely impossible for me to pick one. You know, if I try to, and you almost feel like if you do pick one, you do disservice to other things. Or I'll get off our conversation and go, oh my God, well what about that? You know, that sort of thing. I mean, look, I've always said that I've had the pleasure, privilege, and work of covering the two greatest Michaels in all the sports, Michael Jordan and Michael Phelps. When Jordan came back from the NBA, after he'd been away, I did the first interview with him. That was very meaningful. Obviously, I covered Michael Phelps' quest for 8 gold medals in the Beijing Olympics, an individual accomplishment I don't think we'll ever see again in our lifetime. That was pretty amazing. When I first started off as a producer, I co-produced a film called Autumn Ritual, which is almost like a cult film. It's one of the things I'm most proud of in my career. That was 1985. I still, you know, take great pride in having worked on that. If I look at ESPN, you know, the myriad interviews that I did that were exclusives at that point, Barrett Robbins, you know, who went AWOL at the Super Bowl, Chris right. Carter talking for the first time about his drug and alcohol abuse, Joe Jarovicius, and his wife, who lost a child at 40 days of age, right in the midst of his quest for a Super Bowl with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They've never talked to anybody else, ever, ever, ever. TV, print, that's a big responsibility. I look at Real Sports. Probably the thing that sticks out the most is our six-month look into sexual assault and Bikram yoga.
Yeah.
I mean, I still hear about that story from people. I'm proud of the games that I've covered and news that I've broken. So it's really hard to say. It is. I'm proud that I've had don't use the past tense. I'm proud that I'm having a varied career and one, but again, the common denominator for me has just got to be loving new challenges, thinking that literally every day I'm learning something new. Something that I can improve, something that I want to do better. I cannot tell you working with Hannah Storm how much I learned from her. Oh, my God, she is an incredible broadcaster. And there's so much that I learned from her. She's covered everything. She is, you know, she is a live television maven. She's a pop culture diva. She's so knowledgeable about you name it. And I just sort of look at her sometimes and I marvel. And, you know, I love that. I get completely invigorated at the idea of learning something every day.
Well, we're excited to continue to watch you Thursday night football, you and Hannah Storm, whether it be also on NFL Network or on Real Sports or on CBS Sports Network. This has been a lot of fun and very insightful, and I've been a fan of yours for a long time. I look forward to continuing to be a fan of your work. Andrea Kramer, thank you so much for your time today. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you, Ben. It was great conversation, great questions, and just really thoughtful, and I appreciate it. Thanks for your interest.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
When everyone is on the same page, getting things done is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that enables your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.